What's up, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to another episode. I am going to try and start doing these a bit more regularly, so I have lined up some guests. Today we have Dave Painter. Next week we will have Noel Tran, who is running the Great State Tournament. He's also from the New England area. We're going to talk a little bit about that. He also coached the pro up to 187 guys. The weekend after that, I hope to have Josh Lehman on, captain of Columbus Level and my longtime friend. But today, as I mentioned, we have Dave Painter. Dave is the owner of Fox 4 Paintball, and he's been doing that for about 20 years. His son, Eddie Painter, plays pro for Baltimore Revo. He's also played in a couple other pro teams. We'll talk a bit about that. And he has recently sold the field. I guess it's been up for sale for a while now, and he is going to be traveling the country in an RV during his retirement. So I don't know if there's much of a better way to really spend retirement than, you know, seeing our great country. Shout out to all of our sponsors: Dive, Falcon, New Balance, Ninja, Level Up Sports in Columbus, Ohio. Everyone helping us play the game. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And, you know, if you're interested in field ownership, small business ownership, we talk about kind of trends of the game that have gone on, you know, since the early 2000s, players coming in, players going out, rec ball, a whole bunch of different topics as the conversations normally are. Without further ado, please welcome Dave Painter. We are live. Dave, how you doing? Happy Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy Friday. Doing great.
Glad we could get you on. I know we've been kind of going back and forth for a couple weeks, and you're, you know, a busy guy, so kind of happy to have you here.
Yeah, it's tough. I run I run the paintball field on the weekends, and I'm working full time during the week for Dell Technologies. So, you know, time's a premium.
Yeah, so I actually didn't know that until you told me that in the chat. I thought you did Fox 4 full time. So that's pretty cool. How did you manage? How do you manage to do both?
It's a challenge, right? So been at it for about 19 years now. And in the beginning, when we first started Fox 4, there were several other partners that carried most of the load. And I was more of a kind of a silent, you know, back office guy doing some of the finance and ordering and whatnot. Over the years, though, probably, you know, 5-6 years into it, things became a little bit more busy for me. And I took on more of a day-to-day role. And it's been a challenge. It's put a stress on my relationship. And, you know, the wife doesn't get to see me that much, right? So I'm
right.
You know, Monday through Friday, and you know, I'm at the office, and Saturday and Sunday I'm down here at the field. And I guess, you know, the positive of COVID-19 is currently I work out of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I, which is really nice.
So she sees me more.
Yeah, that's definitely good. So are you the sole proprietor at this point of Fox 4, or are there still other people involved?
Nope. It's my wife and I now. Okay. So probably, I'm a bad historian, but I'll say like 4 years into the journey, we bought out one partner who, wanted to go in a slightly different direction. And then 4 or 5 years ago, my wife and I bought out the other two partners that,
okay,
you know, we're just looking to move on and do other things. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just my wife and I.
Gotcha. You're kind of nearing the end of the road here in terms of Fox 4. Actually, when I did the podcast with your son, which is actually the most popular episode, I'm not saying we're competing here for the most listens, but I do think it's interesting. His has the number one listens, and it still keeps going. I'm curious if that's because he doesn't have social media, really. I don't see him on there too frequently. So maybe people don't know enough about him. But I know that he told me back, this is pre-COVID, pre-Vegas, that you were trying to sell the field and travel in an RV or something along those lines.
Yeah, no, that's true.
That's awesome. So you've just completed that. So you're coming up on the end here. Kind of take me through that. What's that like?
Yeah. So, you know, overall, and it's really a kind of a time thing and a paintball thing. So, over the last 3 or 4 years, our customer base has changed. You see a lot more kids doing online gaming. I think the parents feel a little safer not letting them out into the real world, and they stay at home and play games. So, you know, we've kind of missed some of that customer base, and the business here in general is just, it's slowed down. I won't say it's disappeared, but it's definitely slowed down. And then on a personal basis, right, I've been doing this for 19 years. Let's just call it, 14 years, basically 7 days a week doing something, right? And so it just wears thin over time. And so we put the property up for sale. My wife and I put the property up for sale beginning of last season. And things were really slow. Then COVID hit and things were extremely slow. And then this past like March, April, even with the COVID going on, we just got a ton of hits on the property, and we're basically showings every weekend. And we found a buyer. So we closed November 1st. We got a couple more events scheduled for this year to close out the season. And then I'm just going to become a 10-man player.
Oh, that's awesome. So is it going to stay a paintball park, or are they going to transition it into something new?
Yeah. So unfortunately, that's always a challenge, right? Finding somebody who wants to run paintball and I've kind of articulated that I think the paintball industry in general is a little tight right now, with the customer base and whatnot. So the purchaser, the buyer is a pool maintenance company. The gentleman actually lives in town here where the field is, and he's going to start selling pool supplies and do pool maintenance. And currently, due to COVID-19, the pool industry is booming. So new pool construction is out 2+ years, 2.5 years.
Oh, my God.
The pool maintenance guy told me he's doing twice as many pools this year as he was last year because everybody's stuck at home. So, if you were thinking about putting in a pool, you decided to do it.
Right. Yeah, people are, they're nesting, they're improving their own house now because they're not going out of the house every day. So they're like, well, I got time to, especially, men, when you're bored, you're going to find a project.
You're going to do something.
Even if it doesn't need to be done, you're like, well, I'm going to do this.
Yep. And then you're saving money because, in relative terms, because, you're not going on vacations because no vacation places are open. And, so now maybe you have a little extra money. So it's interesting to see that industry is booming. But anyway, so they're going to come in, end of this year and start taking over.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's great for you. I'm really happy for you there. That's fantastic. But let's go all the way back to the beginning. So you got into it somewhere between 14 and 19 years ago. What kind of drew you to purchasing your own field or being involved in that at all?
Yeah. So it goes even farther back than that. I think Eddie was probably about 5 years old. My wife and I just purchased a new house and we're moving into the house, literally our U-Haul in the driveway, carrying boxes in, and all my neighbors are like loading up into a van. They're all dressed in camo. And they're like, hey, Dave, you want to go play paintball? And at this point, I have no clue what paintball is, but I'm like, and by the way, my wife is probably, I think at this point, like 6 months pregnant.
Okay.
And so I have a box in my hand. I'm like, yes. And I look at my wife, no, no, yes, no. And so I didn't go. And I stayed and unloaded the U-Haul. But the next year, so this group of neighbors did it every year. And so the next year they did the same thing again. And they went to a place down here in Upton, Friendly Fire Paintball. And they went. We had a great time. And I'm the one guy who basically got hooked and started playing every other weekend.
That's awesome.
So I showed up at Friendly Fire every other weekend playing. And then eventually, probably around 2000, I was obviously I'd been there every weekend or every other weekend, real friendly with the owners. And I found out that they had lost their land lease and we're going to be shutting down. So I was like, hey, let's partner up. Let's go find something. And I wrote to all the local landowners here in Upton, found a guy who had a bunch of acreage. He was willing to lease it to us and boom, started a field.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. that seems pretty quick.
Yeah. And so I grabbed, I grabbed the people who were running that field and those three folks, there was two people who were running a store associated with the field, but the store was like in the next town over. And then the field manager who was, running that field and we, the four of us partnered up and that's kind of where, Fox 4 came from. In essence, so if you're in the military at all, when you fire a missile off of the airplane, it's like Fox 1, Fox 2. There was four of us, so it became Fox 4.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that. Were you in the military?
I was not, but one of the people that we, that partnered up with us was a huge, aviation buff, military buff, and that's what he wanted. So we were good with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's become, you know, kind of an iconic name, not just through New England, but, you know, I mean, you guys had Upton 187 crew out of there, just various good players out of that facility. When, I guess, what was your playing career like? I know you played, you know, recreationally and with Darkside. And...
Yep. You know, and my wife will tell you that, you know, Rob Darcy is the, you know, start of the downfall here. We only had a recreational field here, and Rob was a good friend. He came over from the other field and was playing here and doing a lot of work around the field and helping out. And, you know, one weekend we're out, I think it was actually like a weekend, we hadn't even opened the field yet. We were out like with chainsaws, clearing land and doing whatever. And he's like, "Hey, you want to go play a tournament this weekend?" I'm like, "I've never played a tournament. What do you mean?" So we went to Global Paintball down near the Cape and played a five-man event. Our team name was Team Me, and it was all about me. And then we did all right. I think we took third or something like that, and had a good time, and I was hooked. So, you know, if you like paintball in the woods and you love the adrenaline and then you play a tournament, which is, you know, adrenaline on steroids,
right?
Where do you go, right? So, so we started doing tournaments, and then it was not that long after that I was looking at the property we had, trying to figure out how to put a tournament field in. And, you know, we did a bunch of land clearing, and we put in 2 5-man fields. And, you know, remember, this is, you know, close to 20 years ago. So there was no X ball back then. And we started running 5-man events. And then as far as, you know, the 10-man, so we eventually went from the 5-man team, and then we started playing 10-man with Darkside. Playing, God, what was it at the time? MPPL, I think.
Okay.
And I remember playing like the Philly event in 03, you know, a bunch of World Cups. Just that, you know, it's just fun to play, right? Paintball's, you know,
oh, yeah.
It's a fun environment. You make a lot of good friends, you know, and it's fun to get away with the boy, you know, get away with the boys and have a good time.
Yeah, 100%. So was that kind of the team you stuck with then? Like the team was based out of your field, Fox 4, and you guys were Darkside, and you kind of climbed up through the ranks, or
yep,
did you play with anyone else?
Yeah, that was it. You know, oh, wow. I'm one of those guys who's been in the industry a long time, but never played pro. You know, you start looking at a lot of the other people out there, and they all, you know, they played on this pro team or that pro team, you know, 10 man, back in the day. And really, I mean, I think we got as high as, you know, AMA or something like that. But you know, again, it's a drug. We're addicted. Love to play it. Still going to keep playing a lot of 10 man coming up.
Yeah. Are you doing any of what 10 man events are coming up?
The ICPL,
right?
In Chicago. I think it's the first, I want to say it's the first weekend in October, like 3rd and 4th or something like that. So, you know, I talked to Tommy Cole a lot and he's definitely having that. You know, Rennick even said that if for whatever reason, if Tom didn't hold the event, Rennick would hold an event that weekend anyway. Okay. So, you know, I'm getting a band of people together. We're going to go out and play that. You know, we have some people who don't want to necessarily travel because of it. The Darkside guys now are, you know, I'll say a bunch of us are in our older age and you know, middle-aged adults. And so some of them are a little bit less, you know, excited about traveling during these times, but, we'll get 10 or 11 guys out there and we'll go have fun.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I haven't played a 10 man event. You know, I'm in one of the newer, I guess, people. I haven't played anything. Didn't play any MPPL. I was coming into it when the PSP was around. I've just played the NXL. So I missed the whole 10 man thing. You know, I got in about 2007, 2008, maybe 09 competitively.
Sure.
So I really missed a lot of what people call, you know, the glory days of paintball. And then, the 10 man is kind of making a resurgence now. Did you play any like 7-man, or I guess what's kind of your favorite format to play?
We played some 7-man as Darkside. We played some 7-man, and then obviously the 187 guys kind of started out long before 7-man, but they had a run through 7-man as well. You know, favorite format, tough to say. They're all attractive in their own ways. I personally like 10 man. It allows and especially the 10 man as it is today with the classic format that Tim Montressor started, the 5.5, it just allows for a large variety of people to play paintball and be competitive, not just play, but, you know, have opportunities to do well. X-ball obviously is geared more towards the younger, fitter, more athletic people in general.
Right.
And again, as far as determining, you know, who the best, you know, athletic paintball player is, I think it's a great format. I personally like that over a, like a point, you know, best of three or something like that, because the repetitive points allows the best team to win more often than not. The thing about, seven man and even 10 man, you roll the dice, you have a crazy breakout or you have a bad breakout, that could dictate the whole game, right? Especially in seven man, 10 man, it's a little bit more forgiving because you just got so many people, but, in seven man, you know, you would have amateur teams playing pro teams and the amateur team literally has nothing to lose. Right. And so they would have a crazy breakout. They take a couple 50s off the break or, you know, some key bunkers that, you know, nobody else was willing to risk. And, you know, if they made it, they stood a good chance of beating their pro team. And there was no redemption, right? In X-ball, you might have that crazy breakout and you might win that point, but you still got to play a whole bunch more points.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot harder. You have to be way more consistent. Yeah, and it's not all luck. If it just comes down to one point, you know, you shoot two people off the break, it could be anyone's game. Do you think so? You've been, you know, around the game for a long time. This was something I was wondering. Do you think that seven man, that seems to be people's, you know, quote unquote, most favorite format? Do you think if that the NXL leadership today ran a seven man like X-ball event, that it would be more successful than it used to be? Or how do you feel about that?
You know, it's challenging, right? So the number one challenge that any promoter faces, whether it's Tom Cole or myself with Foxball or, you know, Anthony with the NEPLs or whatnot, is finding those people that organize teams, right?
Right.
And the biggest struggle, so if you go from an X-ball event, which is 5-on-5, to, you know, a seven-man X-ball format, now 7-on-7, all I've done is increase the amount of people you need to find to play, right? And so that becomes a little more challenging. And I think, I'm not saying it wouldn't be successful, but I think it would be hard to get the teams that they're getting right now at the NXLs.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. I hadn't really thought of it like that. So coming up, you know, with Fox 4, when did the Upton 187 crew kind of come together, and what was that journey like?
Yeah, so a really fast journey, actually. So Eddie's first tournament, not first national tournament, but first tournament ever was World Cup. I want to say like 2004. And he played with a team called Fox 4 Kids. And then a couple of those kids formed a three-man team after that, that was called the Camo Killers. And they played three-man for, I want to say, a season. So this is like, 2005, 2006. The next year, they started as five-man and finished it as seven-man. And so we just kept progressing along and at a really rapid rate. And then, we played a season as seven man, pretty much locally, you know, dominating everything with the exception of one team, the Friendly Fire Factory team,
okay.
Was by far the best team in the region. And it would typically always came down to the two of us playing, and they always won. And so the following year, we decided we'd merge with them. And,
oh, nice.
And we took, you know, their four or five best players and our, you know, three or four or five best players and made a seven man team. And we played seven man nationally, won the D, D what, 2007, we won the season championship. I want to say it was D3, season champion or no D2, sorry, D2. And then the following year we played D1, 2008. And at this point we're now Upton 187 crew. Okay. Playing. 2008, they played, a bunch of them jumped in with Plattsburgh Negligence in the AXBL or actually I think it was the MXL, so the lower division in that league. That was a league run by Mitch Karn, I believe, out of like the Syracuse Rochester area, and they had the CXBL, so the Canadian X-Ball League, and the AXBL, the American X-Ball League. And by winning the Plattsburgh, by winning MXL, we won an AXBL slot. And so the following year, 2009, we played AXBL, won our division, lost to the Philly Americans in the finals. And then the following year, they caved in and the AXBL folded. And that's when I started Foxball. And then our guys switched over to, I think at the time it was, might have still been the MPPL or the PSP. I don't remember. I think PSP at that point. And then we quickly ran through the ranks. So we played three events as D2. We played Chicago. I don't remember what the fourth event was. Might have been Mid-Atlantic Open, maybe. And then World Cup, and we won all three of those events. I think we only lost one match to the Dallas Stars.
Jeez.
in Chicago. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. It was just a crazy, crazy year. And then the following year, obviously, we jump up to D1. We won two out of the four events that we played. At that time, I think there were only four events that year. Won two out of the four, finished fourth in one, and I think fifth in the other one. Anyway, won our D1 season title and earned our pro spot, and then started pro in 2012.
Wow. Yeah, it's good. Been pro, I mean, not all of them, but you know, they're pro for a period of time and then they kind of retired, but now half of the team is with the Revo. What was that like from, I guess, from a field owner perspective? You were probably their primary sponsor. Paintball is obviously very expensive. I know what it cost us to come up through the divisionals. Did that put like a lot of strain on, I guess, the business, or I guess how were you able to kind of fund the sponsorship? Was it more through rec play, or what was that experience like?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, really in the beginning, right? You nobody knows who you are necessarily, and you're really funding your own way. So at that time, you know, the field pretty much covered a lion's share of it, and the players had to cover a lot of their own expenses, though. Right. So in the beginning, when we first started playing the PSPs in D2, the deal I made with the team was, you know, they had to cover their airfare, their hotels, and car rentals. And I would cover their entrance and their paint.
And their practice paint.
And if they came in first, I would cover everything. If they came in second, I would cover everything but airfare. And if they came in third, I would cover I think it was the car rental, and they had to cover the hotel and the airfare. Well, we won all three events. So, you know, nobody paid anything that year,
right.
which was phenomenal. And then, you know, we had the same deal in D2 or D1 the following year. And again, you know, we had two firsts and, you know, a couple events where we didn't finish in the top three. And, So, you know, some of their events were free, and other events cost them some money. But then as you go pro, and now we've made a name for ourselves, right? You start getting, you know, some opportunities with, you know, like a GI Sports or, you know, PMI and you know, Empire. We've had a longstanding relationship with Planet Eclipse. So we started getting, you know, more free guns, you know, a little better paint, you know, quantities for our practices and whatnot. And, you know, just kind of built from there. But you know, in the end, the field covered a lion's share of what they did.
That's fantastic. I think, you know, it's very expensive to play the tournaments. And I don't think people understand, like, I think there's a misconception of like what players think the field can cover. But if your field is very successful, then they might be able to help you out more. But you as a player also need to bring something back to that field.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting, and it's one point I try to make with, so when we first started the field, you know, and then had the tournament fields here, every three-man team, every five-man team just starting out would email me and say, hey, you know, sponsor me, give me free this, give me free that. And my answer always back to them was, you know, sponsorship's a business relationship, right? There's got to be something in it for both parties. I'm not just here to give away free money. Write up a proposal, tell me what you're going to give me in return for what I'm going to give you. And if we can come to an agreement that we both feel good about, then maybe we can have something here. The concept that if a field does good, it can help sponsor you. All that really means is that the field owner is willing to give up some money that he's earned to sponsor a paintball team. It's not that there's free money because the field did well.
Right.
It's money that the field owner could have kept in one form or another, whether it's, paying more for the paint in the field to get a better sponsorship from your paint vendor, whether it's, selling more guns and getting more credits from, a gun manufacturer. But, either the owner of the field can get those credits or they can elect to basically give those credits to a paintball team. So nothing is free.
Right. Yeah, 100%. I know with the level right now, we have a good relationship with Dye because Panda's, worked with them for a long time. And, luckily we're able to have that. But and because Panda, has been in the game a long time and he's passionate about it, we're able to get the help that we need to, compete at the pro level. But it's very difficult to compete even, through, I would say, like Division One, semi-pro is very tough, and pro even more so. The amount of like funding and work that goes into it and paint that is shot is just ridiculous, to be honest. It's so much.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, any given layout weekend, for an NXL event, now granted we haven't had many of those this year, but the Revo or 187 guys would shoot, on a weekend, 70, 80 cases, right? And so there's two layout weekends. So you're talking about a skid and a half.
Yeah.
Of paint. Anywhere between a skid and a half of paint between those two weekends. Right?
Yeah. That's
and
a
then
lot
you show
paintball.
Up an event and nowadays, I mean, there've been events, especially earlier on, we shot over 100 cases at an event.
That's a lot. I mean, you guys are going pretty deep though. You guys have been a Sunday team, which we're talking about Revo now. You've been making Sundays for a while.
Yeah, we've gotten, relatively consistent on the Sunday club, which is nice, but I can remember an event where we played, I want to say it was four matches and shot 112 cases. I mean, just insane. This was earlier on, slightly longer matches and higher rate of fire, but there's a lot of paint being shot. Now, if you're a divisional guy and you might get a deal where you get paint at a lower cost, right? Maybe you're paying, maybe I'm not supposed to say this on air, but let's just say, you're paying 25, 30 bucks a case, instead of the 35 or 40 bucks a case that everybody else is paying.
Right.
Well, multiply that by 100, you're still talking about $3,000.
Yeah.
Divided amongst 10 guys, that's 300 bucks a person just to show up and play an event. And that doesn't get your entrance, which is another 300 bucks a person. That didn't get your hotel rooms. And, before you know it, the number I used to always use is 1,000 bucks a person. Right. So if you want to go play a national event, it's 1,000 bucks a person. That includes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I could totally agree with that. I mean, I think a paintball season, easily 1,000 bucks an event. And we're getting our entry covered over here at Level, and we get some, some paint help and some gear help. But I don't think people, I don't know if they understand like all the costs that really go into it. When you're kind of starting to get started. That's why I advocate a lot for leagues like yours and like the MSXL, like the NEPL. You can play an NXL event for a fraction of the price and kind of get that same experience and then kind of determine if you want to venture into the NXL. The NXL is obviously going to offer better competition, more prestige. Not really going to maybe offer better prizes, but we don't really play for the prizes. And if you're playing for the prizes,
if you're playing for the prize, you're playing for the wrong reason, right?
Yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you win a pro event, your winnings are $12,000. Okay.
Yeah, it's...
I just told you that to show up and play a pro event at a minimum, it's $1,000 a person for 10 people. That's $10,000. So at best, and I mean at best, you're making $2,000 as a team and you haven't even considered the 2 weeks of practice leading up to this, right?
Right.
So you're losing money. Even winning the event, you're losing money. Now there's 20 pro teams, only one person wins.
Yeah.
Right. And then, do the math, figure it out. If we're doing it for the prize money,
yeah,
we're a bunch of stupid people.
Right. Yeah, you do it because you love it.
Yeah, I do it because I'm an addict.
Right.
I mean, same. Just no doubt about it. Right. I'm addicted to paintball. I will play paintball till I die. You know, whether that's 10 man or something else. You know, and obviously I'm not going to play X ball forever, but I'll play that as well. Right. Until my body won't let me. And then I'll just play 10 man.
Yeah. I mean, 10 man is a great format, especially in the woods. It's bringing back a lot of old school people. Because like you were saying earlier, it allows everyone to play the format.
Yeah. Everybody can participate. I mean, if you go to, you know, like, you know, the event that Tim created, ICC, you'll see, you know, all the old school folks, you know, out there playing. And some of these old school folks are old, right?
Yeah.
And you know, working on one hip and you know, half a knee, and they're still out there playing and having a great time. And you know what, at the end of the day, yeah, they're probably not making the 50 off the break, and they're probably not diving into the snake. They might fall with grace, but that's about it. But they can shoot off the break.
Yep.
You know, and you know, like I play with, you know, one of the guys on Dark Side, 63 years old, Kevin Weeks. Wow. Phenomenal shot, right? He you know, we went to World Cup, played 10 man. I think he shot the guy going to the snake every point he played. And yeah. You know what? If I can have a back guy shoot the snake runner every point, I don't care what he does after that.
Yeah, can't ask for much more than that. Doing his job.
You know what I mean? So, you know, we may be a little older and a little slower, but we still got a good shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. It's a great format. Yep. I want to go back to something you said a little earlier. So you were saying that the clientele in New England and paintball has kind of changed. So you have owned this field for near 20 years. You went through the 07, 08, 09 housing market crash, and now we are into the coronavirus economic crash. How did you see things happen in, like, you know, that 2008 era? And how could you compare that to now in the sense of being a business owner?
Ooh, tough call. So in 2000, you know, let's just call it 2008 for now. The majority of the player base were young adults.
Okay.
All right. So let's just call that mid to late 20s, you know, in that range, right? They were clearly negatively impacted by the economic conditions that happened, right? So we lost a lot of players that, you know, had to make the choice between, do I buy food this week for my family or do I go play paintball? Well,
right.
You know, for the majority of the people, that was an obvious choice. I'm not saying all of them made the right choice, but you know, for the most part, right, people chose to buy food instead of go play paintball. Nowadays, I think, and I don't want this to sound, you know, derogatory, but I think the majority of the player base are, you know, more well-off young kids whose parents pay for them. And that may be, you know, a little harsh, right? And it's not necessarily the full reality, but, and those parents are not, not necessarily impacted by the current conditions. Like I still work full time, right? I work for Dell Technologies. I never didn't work during this pandemic. I work every day. If I had a young son playing professional paintball, and I do, I could still afford to pay for him to go to these things and go play.
Right.
Right. Cause I can, nothing really changed for me. What you are seeing is, you know, I think a lot of newer people aren't coming out and playing cause it's hard to, you know, become, you know, introduced to a sport that has a certain dollar entry point. You know, during this kind of condition, right? This time. But I would say it was much worse in the 08, 09 era as far as, you know, customer base impact. I think video games have been more impactful to our player base than the pandemic.
Really? That's interesting. Could you elaborate on that?
So again, generalization, so not always good, but I think parents in general feel better when little Johnny or little Susie are at home where they know where they are and they know they're safe and they're not out in the big, you know, the big bad world. And so they're playing video games, and then the kids get I'll say a lot of the same interactions, albeit online, right? So you have your online community of kids that you always play with, or people that you always play with. And you have, you know, your basic, I'll say paintball banter, but you have your, you know, video game banter that goes back and forth between those people. You form your own little, you know, groups and teams, so to speak. And mom and dad are happy because it's safe. Well, let's say, let's go with mom is happy because it's safe. I think dad would rather you were out there in the woods. But, and so I think there's been a huge impact there. And it's just, you know, when given a choice, I think the moms would prefer the kids were at home, not outside. And whether we want to admit it or not, I think the moms make most of the choices.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what they say, happy wife, happy life.
Yep.
It's a saying for a reason.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't just come up with that one day.
Right.
It happened over time.
Yeah. So, and there's also a much lower entry point for a video game, because to play paintball, I mean, you don't have to be athletic, but anyone can play in the woods. But if you want to play on the competitive scheme, it's a much higher barrier, you know, whereas a video game, if you get an Xbox or if you have a computer, you know, you're in, and that's it. You pay like a $10 a month Xbox Live or whatever it is nowadays. And
well, and you can just play. And right now, I mean, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, I think a large portion of the population has a computer, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's proving out that, you know, during this pandemic, a large portion of the student population is forced to have a computer because they have to take their classes that way. So, yeah. I mean, everybody, not everybody, but, you know, a large majority have access to a computer, and then it's a small fee to, you know, have the gaming license and play the games. And you get a lot of the same feel, you know, from a friendship and bantering and that kind of stamp. You know, you obviously don't get the impact of the paintballs and so on.
But right.
Again, the moms see that as better and safer. Yeah. I think that's been far more impactful than pretty much anything else that's ever happened.
Yeah. Is there a point in time where you started seeing a trend and a decrease in young men coming out to the field for like the rec player, their first time playing?
Yeah. So probably, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, things really started dropping off. We used to do here at the field, you know, on a Saturday, we would have 5 birthday parties in the morning and 5 in the afternoon. So that's minimum 100 kids. And then Sunday we would do another like 3 and 3 or 4 and 3 or something like that. So that's another 60 or 70 kids. And I'm talking, these are only birthday parties, right? Never mind, you know, bachelor parties and other groups. And nowadays, you know, we're lucky to do a couple birthday parties a weekend.
Jeez.
And so, that's you know, rough. It becomes harder for, you know, even if, you know, little Jimmy wants to play paintball for his birthday and his mom's all for it, it's harder for little Jimmy to find 10 friends or 9 friends whose parents are willing to let him play.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, okay, we'll go bowling again, you know, or we'll do whatever. You know, so there's been a big drop off over the last 4, maybe 5 years. And, you know, quite frankly, if you look at the video gaming industry, I would say that over that same period of time, there's been a huge uptick.
In
the gaming online community and so on. So I have to say they're related, right? They're tied together.
Yeah. I mean, you can see a correlation there for sure, which that's kind of interesting to hear, because if you think about a lot of these podcasts, they do, you know, they ask every pro player, how did you get started playing paintball? And I want to say 9 out of 10, if not like 9.5, if you could cut a person in half, out of 10, say a birthday party, you know, even my friend's birthday party, my birthday party, my friend's cousin's birthday party, they almost all say that. So of our current pros started at a birthday party. So if we are now having half the amount of kids playing at birthday parties, where's the next generation of pros going to come from?
Correct. Exactly. And even somebody like Eddie, whose father owned a paintball field at the time, his first paintball event was a birthday party with 10 of his friends.
Yeah. So right. Is mine.
He inadvertently shot his one of his good friends at point blank range of the thigh.
I literally shot one of my best friends my whole life. I shot him right in the ass. We're standing behind a pallet. It was our first game ever on an official, you know, field. We played at Pinnacle Woods Paintball for my birthday. And I pulled the trigger. It was a rented, I think a Tippmann 98 custom, probably.
Yep, sure.
Right in the ass from less than 2 feet away. My first ever, you know, first shot on a real field. And, But I loved it after that. You know, once that initial fear gets out of you, and once you see how much fun it is when you shoot the other team or when you grab the flag for the first time, and you get that rush.
Oh yeah.
And I've played sports my whole life, so I was, you know, just super into it and super into the competitive, you know, nature of it. Once I learned you could play in a tournament setting, and that just catapulted me into sticking with it. But it's a harder thing to stick with. So video games, you know, that's a pretty low commitment. You can flip on a console or a computer anytime, log on, there'll be people there you can play with. Paintball, you know, you're driving, you know, minimum half hour depending where you live. Like the closest field I have to me now, I'm in Brighton, Massachusetts, is I want to say Boston Paintball. Yep. But when I have to go to practice next weekend, we're doing a, you know, a mandatory 2-day practice, I gotta fly there and then drive from Cleveland to Columbus. Yep. That's, you know, oh, that's a trek.
So it's, obviously, you know, 4 or 5 hours between getting to the airport, flying, getting a rental car, or, you know, meeting up with somebody or whatever, right? That's 3 or 4 hours. And then, you know, it's however long a drive from, you know, Cleveland to Columbus, you know, yep. And, yeah. And it I mean, it's a journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely. Like when you first start in those kind of formative years, like age, like, you know, 12, 13 through like 16, where you might not have, you obviously don't have a car because you can't drive. Once you're 16, you can drive, but like your parents are going to have to take you to the field. And if the field, when I first started playing, it was an hour away. It was in a small town called, we started, you know, north in a town called Chardon. Then we moved to like Mentor, Ohio. Then we went to Alliance, Ohio, which is south, very far south of Cleveland. And your parents have to drive you there when you're a kid. And if you have to be like, oh, hey, like, are you doing anything Sunday morning? Do you want to drive me over an hour away to get shot by a bunch of adults playing paintball?
Yeah.
And if they don't want to do that, then you're out of luck.
Yeah. And back then, right, when you first started, you were probably playing against mostly adult people.
Yep.
Right. And so yeah. imagine your mom thinking, well, I'll drop Justin off here at this paintball field. And, you know, he's 14 years old and he's going to go hang out with a bunch of 27-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird look.
Probably a little concerned.
Yeah. I know the first month we started playing, we had a little 5-man team. The first month we played paintball at this field, it was called Bill's Backyard. It was literally just one speedball field, one blow up speedball field, you know, modern day X-ball bunkers. And it was woods on both sides, but it was like owned by a farmer, and then one net. And we didn't win a point for over a month. I don't think we won a single point. But we kept coming back. We, you know, we were at Division 5 was the lowest division then. So we were playing Division 5, and we were playing against a Division 2 MPPL team. They were shooting like uncapped semi or 15 balls a second or whatever it was. Destroying us. And we're, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids. But a lot of kids would quit. You know, they come home all beat up. But we didn't. We stuck with it. But it's also hard nowadays, because if you go to a field and you're just getting beat up, you might not come back.
Yeah, and that's the probably, you know, you're hitting upon the, one of the biggest concerns I have about tournament paintball is currently right now the entry into tournament paintball across the country is D4 X-ball.
Right.
So here in New England, we have very little 3- and 5-man events, right? So I think AG Paintball runs a 3-man thing. Anthony tries to run a 3-man and a 5-man event, but, you know, over the last, call it 5 or 6 years, those have pretty much dried up, right? You get a handful of teams. So if you go to a birthday party and, you know, at my field, you, the birthday parties could sit on the bleachers and watch the tournament guys. And trust me, every birthday party did, right? They thought it was really cool, but their entrance into that venue is D4 X-ball. I mean, there are some really good D4 X-ball players.
Oh yeah.
And you take a group of, you know, never played before, you know, never played tournament ball before, and say that's how you're going to start. It's not happening.
Right? No, not a chance.
And so a lot of, you know, what we're seeing now is that, you know, people are obviously just naturally aging out, right? So as you get older, you get girlfriends, wives, kids, houses, other responsibilities, and you stop playing. So every year, every league in the country loses, you know, a handful of teams because of this. And then in the past, you would have gotten a handful plus 5 teams coming in. Well, now you get something less than a handful of teams coming in. So you're losing more than you're getting. And that's a recipe for getting to zero at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. The speedball realm is definitely tough. They're trying to kind of open it up to, you know, the D5 and D6 in other parts of the country. I think, you know, the MSXL might offer like a D6. Yep. I help out Anthony a little bit, you know, I'll ref those NEPL events occasionally if I'm available, and if he needs a ref, he'll text me and I'll try and ref him. But I don't try to do that too often because reffing tournament paintball is the worst. but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, just ask all the 187 guys.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the ways, you know, so back on the sponsorship conversation we had, you know, 30 minutes ago. You know, one of the things that we did was I said, you know, when we ran events here, they had to ref the X-Ball events. And that way the money that they would have typically gotten paid to ref goes towards, you know, entrance, airfare, paint, whatever, you know, to help offset some of those costs.
Yeah, that's what I used to do when I played D1 with Asylum. We played semi-pro. We had that exact same setup. We would ref the MSXL series and we would get free entry and free paint. And then we, you know, we'd pay our airfare and hotels and that kind of stuff. But I think that's a good setup. And I think a lot of people need to do that in you know, the D2, D1, maybe not the pro level, but Division 2 and Division 1. Like, you have to kind of be able to earn your keep and provide value to the field. And if you're not going to do that, then why should the field give you anything?
Exactly. And right. And what does the field have? The field has, you know, paint, it has entrance money, it has practice time. And what do you, the player, have? You have time.
Right.
Right. So you have to give your time, and your time is reffing. It's, you know, showing up and reffing the X-Ball events, or it's, you know, maybe you ref on the weekends, you know, Woods Ball or whatever. Right. But you have time and they have, you know, resources, and that's the trade.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also interesting. I think, you know, now that I've done this, you know, competitive paintball thing for a long time, as you kind of get older, I've kind of phased out of the reffing, but I've also made more money in my day job, my professional career, where when I'm younger, when I'm like 21, 22, 23, 24, in college, or I'm just coming out of college, I'm not an established professional. I'm making an entry level salary. So I need that extra help to be able to play paintball. But as I've kind of climbed the divisions and climbed my professional life as well, now I really don't need that extra help. So, you know, if I have a free weekend and somebody hits me up to ref and I'm not doing anything else, then I could do it. But before, I was like seeking out the opportunities to work on the weekends. Like, oh, hey, like, I'll rep this event, I'll rep that event. You know, I used to work for Anthony last year. I would just work, you know, Sundays, you know, whenever I could to make the extra money.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. And you know, I saw that natural progression, you know, with the 187 guys, because when we first started out, they were all kids. Right.
Yep.
So obviously they, you know, they had to ref because that's how they got money, or they, you know, that's how they got their things covered. And then, you know, as they all got older and through the years, you know, I had refs that were like, hey, look, I'll just pay you the $150 and find somebody else to ref.
Yeah.
You know, cause to them, it was no longer about the money. It was about the time, and they wanted their time for other things on the weekends.
And 100%.
You know, it's a natural progression, right?
Yeah. As long as you're able to make more money as you get older, it's a natural progression. Once you do the math and you're like, all right, I'm working a 10-hour day at Fox 4, I'm getting shot, I'm getting yelled at right, by kids. Right. And then I divide it hourly, I'm like, ooh, right. I make more than that on my day job. So
I made $10 an hour and got shot at and was yelled at all day long.
Right.
You know, or I could just pay Dave the $150 and tell him have a nice day.
Yep. Yeah, I think everyone should ref though. If you're a tournament player, because everyone yells at the refs all the time. I still do it, even though I've refed events. I'll still yell at the refs because
100%.
We're just human, you know. The refs are going to make errors. Players are going to cheat. That's just the way it is. But I think everyone should do it. That way, you know where the refs are coming from.
Oh, absolutely, right. And you know, I will definitely yell at refs still, and I always afterwards always go up and talk to them and tell them, you know, heat of the moment, I apologize, right? And most refs are very understanding of that because they're also, you know, in some form or another, they're also players, whether it's tournament players or rec players or whatever. And so, you know, it's just good to recognize that and admit your, you know, kind of where you fell and what was wrong with the situation. But it's also just human nature to be, you know, full of adrenaline, shooting people, get a little frustrated at you know, calls you think are incorrect. But
yeah,
roughing is, roughing is one of the hardest things.
Yeah, the game's so fast, and you know, it's just, you're never going to get it 100% right. Even in professional sports, they don't get it 100% right, where they're making way more money than paintball players are making.
Yeah, and not only more money, more training, you know, more video access. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when they even go to video review, and I would still consider they got it wrong. You know, because you know, you if you call it one way on the field, you need overwhelming evidence to turn it over, right? And it just, it's hard. Reffing in general, any sport, is hard.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny, if you think back a couple of years ago to when the NFL brought in those like substitute refs, and the two refs, it was the iconic play where the two refs in the end zone made different calls. And then after the next week, the strike was over, the NFL paid the regular refs to come back in. You know, they paid them what they wanted, and they gave them what they needed. And it just shows you how important it is to the games to have skilled people, though they're not perfect, if they're better than what the alternative.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's once you get past the fact that you know it's not going to be 100% perfect, having something close is far better than having, you know, something that's not close to perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. As players progress up the divisional spectrum, they become better at paintball, and like vis-a-vis, they would probably be better at reffing just because they know what to look for. They know when a player twitches, oh, that guy probably got hit. But they also try and phase out of reffing. How has it been trying to find refs for your events? Because I know a lot of regional people struggle with that.
It's a struggle. And this year, so in years past, I did actually multiple weekends for events. So when I was originally running Foxball, it was a series, not a single event. So each quote unquote event, you would play two full matches, and a full match for Foxball was 18 minutes, no mercy. So, and you would play two matches, and that was your event. And then you would have five events, so you'd have 10 matches, and then based on your season standing, so many refs would, you know, so many teams would go on to play in the finals for the quote unquote sixth event. And back then, so it was easier because I ran multiple weekends in order. I had so many teams, I had to do two weekends in order to get a whole event in. So you can imagine people who played event one or weekend one might ref weekend two, and people who were playing weekend two might ref weekend one. So it was easier to manage, you know, the ref staff. Right now I'm down to single day or single weekend, and it becomes a challenge to find, you know, qualified refs. I guilt Eddie into it every time. He's my head ref.
Yeah, you have to.
If you ask him, he would clearly prefer not to do it. But he is my son and lives under my roof, and you know, I help get, you know, where he is today, and so he feels obligated to ref for me. Right?
As he should.
Yep. And then there's a handful of other people that you know, will volunteer just due to the standing relationship I have. But trying to field, you know, 9 or 10 refs on a field is challenging.
Yeah,
it really is. And yeah, for the reasons you've pointed out.
Yeah, and you want those refs to be a higher division generally than the players that are reffing. That way they know the rules, they know what to look for, you know, they can see who's actually trying to cheat. Like if you're reffing like a D4 event, so when I was like, you know, a D1 player reffing Division 4, you can kind of tell who knows what they're doing and who doesn't.
Yep.
So if there's somebody out there, their loader's sticking way to the right, you know, they're not tucked into their bunker tight, they are flailing around, they're not really sure what's happening in the game, and they get shot and they're not really aware of it, odds are they're not actually cheating versus...
They just don't know.
They just don't know. So I think having, especially in the regional, I know it's supposed to be black and white, you know, you're hit, you pull the trigger, it's a minor. You hit, you shoot a player, it's a major. Not all the refs seem to know that, but it's supposed to be black and white. But I think when you have the higher divisional players able to ref the lower divisions, like, you know, D3, D4, you can kind of tell who knows what they're doing, who's not actually intending to cheat, and who is intending to cheat. And I think that helps a lot. And, you know, like when the moves are going to be made, where the lanes are, what to look for, where to stand.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Quality's just higher.
And I think if you look at it the other way and say you know, you fill the field with bodies, right? And you take some lower divisional players and you're playing and you're reffing a higher division, there's a more likelihood that you get bullied on the field too. Mm-hmm. Right. And just, you know, you have a certain level of respect or whatever for the higher division players, and they, I won't say physically bully you, right? But they, you know, talk their way out of things and, you know, position such a way that, you know, you don't know what's going on, and it can be challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. There's actually a funny photo that Noel Tran put on your Facebook. Says obligatory Dave Painter yelling at the refs moment, probably blaming Nick Roberts for something.
Yeah.
I don't know who Nick Roberts is, but
yeah. So Nick Roberts used to play for me on 187. He hasn't played in a while. But you know, obviously in the 187 days, they all had to ref, and, you know, I'll say I bring a lot of passion to the game and to the tournaments that we run. And, you know, I do expect a high level of you know, effort and commitment, and, you know, I do strive for perfect reffing, though it's impossible to have, you know, that's always the goal starting out. And, you know, if we miss calls, or if, you know, certain, you know, let's say, you know, team A is, you know, not one complaint, but multiple complaints about a certain ref or a certain, you know, call or type of call or play or whatever, I will always stop the games and bring the refs together, and I'll say talk to them, but sometimes it's not talking, and make sure that we're getting it right. I will always err on, you know, taking extra time to make sure we get calls right. And even if that means, you know, the day falls behind the schedule a little bit, because, you know, these folks are paying money, they're paying entrance, they're buying paint. They expect, you know, a certain level of effort to be put forth, and we owe it to them. Right. And so I'll take the time to make sure the calls are right. I won't just go down there and go, look, hey, the ref said this, that's it, move on. You know, 'cause that's not the answer. You know, everybody wants to feel like they got heard. It may not, in the end, it may not change the calls,
right?
But I think people feel better about the situation. They feel that you know, their complaint was heard and registered and addressed, and hopefully the refs, you know, they see the refs getting talked to, and they're like, okay, things will be better now. They at least know to look for, you know, whatever, you know, the run through or something.
You're trying to improve. You're at least listening.
Yep. And that's all we can do.
Yeah, the last Fox Ball is coming up, and the field layout you have going on is crazy. You got the W back out there. You have tents. You have a car wash.
Yep.
It's a rocking field, it looks like. Yeah. Is it still that same format, 18-minute old school X-Ball style?
No. So this year we switched over to single events because we just didn't have the overall participation in the league. So it was harder to run a season when, you know, you didn't know who was going to show up. And so we went to what I'll say more traditional single event. Each event has a winner. And this is event four coming up September 19th and 20th. And then our last event will be October 23rd and 24th. And then we're done. So this is our fourth event. Typically in the NXL, Chicago always has a goofy layout.
Right.
Well, this is event four, so we're having a goofy layout.
That's awesome.
Seeing how it's also, you know, our last season, and we have a, you know, a purchase and sales agreement in place, and we're, you know, not going to be holding events after this year. I also decided, you know, hey, let's do some retro stuff, right? So I happen to have, you know, a car wash, a tent, and a W laying around. I wish I had some other bunkers, but I don't. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put these on the field, and you know, let people enjoy it, right? And have fun. And some of these kids, I mean, we have a couple teams that are relatively young. They've never seen a W.
Yeah. You mean a car wash or a W?
Or a car wash or a tent. I mean, they haven't seen any of them, but.
Yeah. These literally on these photos, they literally say NPPL on them. That is old school.
Oh yeah.
Man, that's cool. So I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, Revo this year. So you obviously Eddie's on Revo, half of the 187 guys are on Revo. What is your kind of role in that organization? And obviously we don't have a season this year, which sucks. You guys got fourth at the first event.
Yeah, we're fourth overall for the year. We finished fourth for the season.
Yeah. Well, finishing the season, that's another thing I want to talk about, I guess, because, you know, you said you're friends with Tom and they're doing the ICC. He's pretty adamant we're going to have a World Cup. Correct. Obviously with Corona, a lot of people don't think that. So I guess we'll go into that first. Do you think we're going to have a World Cup?
100% we will.
Okay.
Yeah. So the real question is, you know, will it be the World Cup that you know, or will it be World Cup in name, right? And so, you know, I'm fairly certain, I don't know factually, but I'm fairly certain Tom signed the contract for the facility, you know, that we're going to have, you know, he's going to host a World Cup. I think the city of Orlando allows 50 people per acre outdoors. He has enough acreage there to be, you know, roughly 2,600 people, I think. So, oh, wow. That's not enough for a traditional World Cup. So you're going to need some modifications. So maybe a morning afternoon bracket, worst case scenario, maybe a couple weekends, which I don't think will work in personal opinion.
But yeah, I agree with that. I could see
a morning afternoon bracket. And basically if you're in the morning bracket, you have to leave by noon. If you're in the afternoon bracket, you can't show up till noon. You know, or whatever. And that limits the number of people that are there. I think naturally the attendance will be limited anyway, because there are going to be teams, or at least people, which will then impact teams that don't want to travel. Right.
Right.
You know, and you know, there's players on, let's just go Revo, that will not travel for paintball right now. Right. And so, you know, it is what it is, right? It's going to impact the overall attendance of World Cup, but there will be, unless something drastic happens, right? Tom will hold World Cup.
Okay. Do you think, I guess it's, as a business owner, do you think it's wise to hold the World Cup knowing that some teams are not going to want to do it? Do you think it's good for the brand? It's a must happen. Do you think it'd be better logistically? Let's just hypothetically say Tom could get all the money back that he put signed on the venue. Do you think it would be better to just cancel it and try for next year? Because they're obviously probably not going to make any money on the World Cup due to the limited attendance.
Yeah, so in general, it's not a money issue, right? I mean, you have two people, you have more than two people, but you have at least two people backing the league that are I'll say, well off financially.
Yeah.
Right? and so they can hold, you know, as we like to say at Dell, they can hold their breath longer than the other guy, right? So they can, you know, not have World Cup and afford to take whatever losses and move on, right? But as an industry overall, World Cup represents something that at the very least Tom believes, you know, really needs to be there. And so, I mean, and it's hard to disagree with him. Now, on the flip side of that, you know, what kind of exposure and what will it say about the league if, you know, 50 people come down with COVID or something? I don't know the answer to that. I understand Tom's position that he feels World Cup is an important, iconic thing, event, and that he really wants to hold it. But it's not about money. It's not about making money trying to put, you know, pennies in the pocket kind of thing. It's truly just, he believes it's a, you know, industry staple, an iconic event that has to happen.
Yeah, no, I could agree with that. I think I actually said on my last podcast with one of my teammates that I'm not worried about the NXL going out of business for that exact reason, because, you know, Bart and Sarge, they can hold their breath longer than the next guy. So,
The only thing you have to worry about is if they lose interest.
That's what I'm worried about, is because after that, to go back to like that 08 recession, after that, the amount of divisional teams that played in the D3, D4 X-Ball were very, very small, and the PSP was what it was at the time. It was like 8 teams at like PSP Chicago or something in D4X, which is traditionally the biggest division because it has the lowest barrier to entry in the speedball world.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to see that impact this time around.
That's good.
I really don't. And I could be completely wrong on that. But, you know, as I said earlier, right, I think that you know, back in 08, a lot of the people that were playing were self-funding. And so when hit economically, they could no longer self-fund.
Yeah.
Right. Nowadays, I don't think people are necessarily self-funding. Whether that means, you know, parents are paying more for it, or, you know, there's just more fields out there, and therefore there's more, you know, let's just say, you know, call a spade a spade. There's more Eddie Painters out there, right? Who has a father who runs a business who wants to go play paintball, and they make it happen.
Yeah. So interesting, I guess, to think with the kind of the hit, but there kind of has been a hit to the paintball industry in terms of like less people playing with the coronavirus. A lot of fields had to temporarily close in different states. I know Massachusetts had a temporary like shutdown of the fields. Do you think that will impact sponsorship for next year? Like, will Planet Eclipse be able to give a pro team as many guns as they have? Will the paint manufacturers be able to give these teams their allotted paint per event? Do you think that'll still be there?
Yeah, that is a tough call. I'll tell you that I think Planet is probably in a better place than GI Sports. Or let's just say, you know, high-end gun manufacturers are probably in a better place than paint manufacturers. Because I believe that they have continued to sell their equipment, that everybody wants the latest and greatest. And even if you're not playing right now, you can still go out and buy a new gun and be ready to play with it, right?
Right.
Paint manufacturing, on the other hand, I think plants closed down. Now, I don't know that factually, but I think they stopped making paint for a while, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's a challenge, right? So, you know, and I think the reality is that whether anybody, you know, believes it or not, paint manufacturers make money selling paint.
Right? Yeah, right.
There's a margin in there somewhere. And if you know, just like a field, right? If I consumed 100 skids last year and I only consume, you know, 30 skids this year, I'm not making as much money.
Right.
And maybe I'm not making enough money to pay my bills. Who knows, right? So, and same can be said about gun manufacturers. And this is a gut feel more than anything, but I think the gun manufacturers and Planet in particular, I mean, they have quality, you know, quality product, top of the line, and I think they've continued to sell their equipment at a good pace. Now, what I don't know is, are they making a lot less of it or not right now? That I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I really don't know. I know it's a European company. I don't know exactly where their guns are made, if it's in like some, you know, like Taiwan or something, or if it's made in the UK.
They're all assembled in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah. I think certain parts are made elsewhere, but they're all assembled and tested individually in the UK.
Okay. That's good now. Yeah, because I think a lot of people, you know, we got that one-time stimulus check, and like for somebody who wasn't super affected, like, you know, you or me, who got maybe a small stimulus check, they could use that to buy a paintball gun.
And a lot of people did.
Yep. Yeah. The BST on Facebook was going nuts. Everyone was buying stuff with that check.
Yep.
I just put mine in the bank because I already have a gun. But a lot of people didn't. A lot of people spent that money, which is what you're supposed to do to stimulate the economy.
Right.
But all these people are not out spending money on practice paint or going to a field for recreation. You know, they're going to use that money to purchase the marker. So it does make sense that they would be okay. I think a lot of tournament players kind of have blinders on, in the sense that maybe they don't realize that rec play is really the true lifeblood of paintball where it comes to funding the fields and how a field owner makes money. Because I don't think the speedball field is the bread and butter of any field. And if that's your bread and butter, you might be in trouble in the long run. But if the rec players aren't coming out to play, they shoot a lot of paint. You know, they're all the birthday parties, all the bachelor parties, people that walk on, they're shooting a lot of paint, and
yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
The paint manufacturers rely on.
Yep, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, the question is, will any of the sponsorship, let's assume World Cup happens, right? Will any of the sponsorship be impacted at World Cup? You know, my answer to that is I don't know, but boy, I hope not, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And then, you know, the next question is, you know, does sponsorship change, you know, for, you know, 21, 22, 23, whatever, right? You know, the next couple of years, I got to believe people are going to be more cautious, right? You know,
yeah.
the you know, leaders of those companies, right, are going to be, you know, more cautious and maybe more, you know, language, additional language added to contracts about number of events played and, negative financial impact, economic impact to their corporation of impacting sponsorships. Who knows, right? I mean, I could see a lot of changes potentially happening.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, it's worrisome, but it's economics. You have to make money as a business. You have to stay in business. You have to employ people. People need salaries. People need benefits. That's just what it is. But dive into Revo. So this is the newest, it's like a merger essentially of 187 and Revo. And Eddie and I talked a bit about this a long time ago. There was the name change that was going to happen. It didn't happen. But now we don't even have a season, so it doesn't really matter too much. But kind of dive into
the worst $5,000 we ever spent.
Oh, right. Just to get the banner changed
for one event or maybe
yeah, right. So blessing in disguise there, but kind of dive into, modern day Revo, your role in Revo.
Sure.
And that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, right now I am half of a sponsorship package for Revo. So, when we first got the groups together, and Eddie came over to Revo, it was Paintball Adventure Park and Fox 4 Paintball sponsoring the team. So between, my longstanding relationship with Planet Eclipse and GI, Paps had a relationship with GI. We were able to put together a pretty good package for them. And then we changed over from Paps to Top Gun, but still very similar, right? So, two fields doing okay, still had our great relationship with Planet. We both had a good relationship with GI. So we're able to put together a package that, I believe made the team as I'll say competitive as possible, right? And it's not competitive. It just, it didn't impact their ability to be competitive. Let's go with that. I'll admit, right, I'm a little bit one-sided, but I believe Planet has, the best guns out there, and I believe GI makes the best paint available. So why not shoot the best guns with the best paint? Now,
makes sense.
I know there's other manufacturers of both guns and paint that make good product as well, right? But we've been Dye, Valken, and
those are my guys. So I
got I got you right, and then you got the Lux and the Shockers and whatnot, right? So I mean, there's options out there, but I've been with Planet for a long time, and they do make a pretty good quality product that I'll stand behind every day of the week. So that's kind of where it falls as far as, what's my role with Revo is really just pulling the deal together for them to make sure that they could field the team. Outside of that, I support them at every event, pretty much their pit help, right? I'm not necessarily their coach. We have Pat to coach them, and in previous years we had Matt Sossman. Mm-hmm. And then before that we had, Rick Hartman, from Paps, coached for a little while. And so I'm just an athletic supporter, right? Yeah. I'll run and get an extra paint. I'll watch breakouts and record where people go. I'll drop a few F bombs when things don't go right.
Dump pods on NYX.
Yeah. That was pretty much a one-time thing. Well, there's a hate relationship there.
It's good though. It's good for the sport to have rivalry.
Yeah. But that's my role, right? I mean, I typically fund some of the extra stuff, at events as far as, it's not like they pay me to help them in the pitch or anything, right? I'm paying my own way. So it's a positive financial impact to the to the team versus, having to pay somebody to do that kind of stuff.
Right. 100%. We're decently over an hour here. So the last question I would like to ask is, could you give three tips for anyone that would be interested in starting a paintball field or a small business? And what would those be?
Starting a paintball field. Don't do it.
Don't do it. I was going to actually exclude that one because I knew that'd be tip number one. I should have went with that.
The bottom line is do something you love, right? If I didn't love paintball, I would have been out of this business, 15 years ago. The fact that, I'm a paintball addict and just love paintball and quite frankly, love every aspect of it. I'll go play a big game. I'll go play, tournaments, whatever, it doesn't matter. And, but you have to do something you love, right? And it's true. If you do something you love, it's not like you're going to work every day. And that is the key because, when you're running a business, whether it's a paintball business or anything else, there's no clock I punch. It's not a 9-to-5 clock, right? There are days I'm here at 5 in the morning to get ready for a tournament. There's other days I'm here at 8 at night when the sun's going down in the middle of the summer because we're, cleaning up something or fixing something or whatever. And if you don't love it, then you don't want to be there anymore.
Right.
After that, I think the tips are almost irrelevant, right? I mean, if you pick something that you love, you will work hard at it. And not everybody's going to be successful for lots of different reasons, but you have a higher probability of being successful if it's something you truly enjoy doing.
That's a great tip. That's great.
And make sure you have fun, right? I mean, the whole reason behind, 187 and continuing on with Revo and even like playing with Darkside and the 10-man guys and continuing that on is because I enjoy hanging out with those people. I enjoy the atmosphere and the fun part of it. And it's about enjoying yourself, right? As I've come to realize, and I'm a little older than you, this is a one-way trip, right? No one gets out alive. Enjoy it while you're doing it. Have fun.
That's great. Where's the first stop in the RV?
Oh, good question. Right now, we're planning. So there's probably like a 2-year plan. But the idea is no real first stop. We're going around the country. So we're going to most likely travel south to Florida, across to Texas, up California, and across the top. Idea is to hit all the states. Eventually, would like to go to Alaska as well, which means I got to go through Canada. Can't take the RV to Hawaii, which is a little bit of a bummer, but
makes sense.
Yeah. Get long big gap. Ride. But we're going to go everywhere. But the real goal behind the RV is that we have a great country here, and there's a lot of great things to see in our country, and the average American does not see but a fraction of them. Many people don't even leave the state they were born in.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, if you're born and raised in Ohio and never leave Ohio, you miss out on a lot of good things.
Oh yeah.
And so I want to have that opportunity while I'm still able and capable of walking around and enjoying it, to go see all these great things our country has to offer.
Yeah. And paintball kind of offers that, but you don't really get to see it all. But the travel aspect, you kind of get that bug with paintball.
Yeah. So I should have warned you at the beginning. I can talk about things forever. Because the paintball travel, in the beginning was very businesslike.
Yeah.
We would show up to events, we'd go to the field, we'd walk the field, we'd go to the hotel, we'd stay up and game plan and look at video and watch, look at layouts. We'd wake up, we'd go to the field, we'd play our games, we'd go back, we'd order pizza or salad or whatever, we'd do more game planning. You play on Sunday and everybody rushes to the airport and you go home.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so I can tell you that, I've been to Chicago probably, 20 times in my paintball career, maybe more. It wasn't until last year or maybe the year before that I saw the Bean.
Wow.
Like I just never had time. Like we never did it. Like it was always, it was more a business trip. Right. And so, that's probably, a good piece of advice for people. When you're doing these things and traveling around the country and you're paying the money to go somewhere, take the extra day. Go see something in Austin, in Orlando, in Chicago, in wherever, right? Wherever the events are, take the extra day. every state has something to offer to go see, whether you go to a museum, you go to a natural wonder, whatever it is.
Yeah, you can't really give better advice than that. I know it's not possible for everyone, but if it is, you have to follow that advice. Typically at the end of these, I give people a chance to thank people, but I think really the people of Upton, of Massachusetts, anyone that's played at Fox 4 would probably like the opportunity to thank you, but I'll give you the opportunity anyway. Is there anyone you'd like to thank, at the end of this on your journey? Anyone you want to shout out?
Yeah. I mean, I obviously got to start with my wife. She's put up with this for, we'll call it 20 years, right? And without her patience and understanding, none of this would have been possible. So, huge shout out to her. Obviously all the folks at GI and Planet, they've continued to support not only, myself in the field, but the teams that I've put out there, 187 and Revo. So that's a huge plus. The folks at Virtue, Chris Williams and team, the folks down at Exalt, truthfully, all the Dive Alkin, all the paintball community, they've always been there for, whether it's for me or a team we've supported or just the players in general. So, huge shout out to everybody in the industry. It's greatly appreciated. And no one could do what we do for fun, without their support.
Yeah. 100%. Dave Painter, everybody. Thanks for coming on.
All right, man. Justin, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.